Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, fun guest coming up for us in a couple of minutes here today. We're going to talk to Bill Bender from the Sporting News. Bill has ranked the top 25 quarterbacks in college football. And on his list, quite high, he has Georgia's Jamie Newman. We'll let him explain later on why he not only ranks Newman ahead of, like, say, Florida's Kyle Trask, but also all the other quarterbacks in the SEC. That'll be fun with Bill Bender coming up in just a few minutes. Speaking of that, before we get to Bill Bender on the subject of fun, let me talk about some Georgia recruiting for a moment. It's kind of cool to see the onslaught, the blitz that Georgia seems to have put together for the pass rusher, Dallas Turner, out of St. Thomas Aquinas High School down there in South Florida. If you looked at Kirby Smart's Twitter feed yesterday, you saw this continual series of retweets of a lot of, it's everything from like current Georgia commits like David Daniel and Lavoisier Carroll, former Georgia player Lorenzo Carter, current players in between Darnell Washington, Malik Herring, Aziz Ojulari. You saw Brock Vandergriff, I guess the guy that got all this started, Eric Stokes getting involved too, that wanted Apex Predators poster looking edit thing that Georgia's put together, all about Dallas Turner, all about trying to get his attention and kind of get going there with him on the big recruitment here. Now, as I said before, it's really fun to see such a coordinated effort being led by Georgia players to get involved with Turner. Honesty compels me to admit the reasons why the social media blitz is taking place may be a little less fun. I thought that Jeff had a very our buddy Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider Jeff Sintel, had a very revealing story about Dallas Turner going back a couple of weeks ago, where he said that right now Alabama probably leads over Georgia, mentioning the championships that Alabama has won, mentioning the players that Alabama's put into the National Football League. Can't really dispute that. If that matters to Turner, it's easy to see why he's going to like Alabama in that regard. However, the other thing that Turner said in that story with Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com may have been even more important than that, and it may have kind of flown below the surface. It's one thing for him to say Alabama's my leader. It's another thing for him to say, I'm not sure I need to take all five of my official visits to make my decision about where I want to go to school. That's the part that complicates all of this. And that's the reason why, if you've got willing recruits and players who can make a social media blitz to a pass rusher like Dallas Turner, you probably need to do it, because Turner has said before, there's a school other than Georgia that's probably my leader, and I don't know that I'm going to have to hold out and get all my visits done to ultimately make that decision. Now, complicating matters even more, let me let you hear Jeff Sintel from Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger last night on the Dog Nation video channel. If it's already been acknowledged that Georgia's in a big-time battle with Alabama for Dallas Turner, there is someone else who has now entered the chat. Jeff Sintel told us about that last night. Take a listen to this.
Dallas Turner out of St. Thomas Aquinas, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Really great pass rusher there. He was the South Florida Defensive Player of the Year. Now, Clemson's in there a little bit now. Clemson recently offered. I'm sure the Tigers will probably do their best to get a visit once recruiting can reopen. Quick reminder there, folks, that recruiting cannot happen on campus until at least through the end of June. That's according to the most recent NCAA legislation.
So I think that's a problem for Georgia, right? This is one of those examples of, I think for the most part, it seems like Georgia's done a pretty good job of managing the absence of visits that's taking place. They seem to, at least on the basis of some of the reporting that we've seen, Jeff Sintel included, they seem to have maintained pretty good contact. Kirby Smart's been really, really careful in a lot of the interviews that he's done, whether it be the press conference he did for all reporters a few weeks ago or a couple of the one-on-one things he's done since then. I believe in just about every instance that we've heard from Smart publicly over the last few weeks, he has cautioned against reaching out to these recruits too much because of the, I've described it before as commission breath. It seems like you're a little too pushy. It seems like you're forcing them to make a decision a little too soon. Smart seems to be really cognizant of all of that. He has seemingly handled that pretty well. But if you are in the trailing position on a recruit and you are currently banned from hosting that recruit on a visit, it's hard to make up that ground right now, which is why I think you see the creativity that's out there with Georgia trying to get its former players like Lorenzo Carter, its current players like Stokes and Ojulari and the others, and the recruits, you know, kind of getting involved here, trying to, you know, reach out and let a guy like Dallas Turner know that the Georgia players very much want to see him as a part of that class. And what it kind of reminds me of a little bit, a few days ago, Jeremy Pruitt, who's obviously been on a little bit of a recruiting heater as of late, I think they had another commit again yesterday. I mean, they're going to have 75 commits before the summer even officially starts. But nonetheless, he was doing a local radio interview in Knoxville about some of the recruiting success they had had. Now, he can't mention the recruits by name, but he was willing to kind of have a generic recruiting conversation. And Pruitt at the time actually spoke about using your current players or the willingness of your players, recruits, to help recruit their teammates. And in seeing what's gone on with Georgia over the last couple of weeks, what Pruitt said about this seems really relevant. Now, when you hear Jeremy, he's obviously talking about the Tennessee situation, but given the fact that Pruitt and Smart are kind of in some ways cut from the same cloth, it's easy to understand Pruitt's explanation for why Tennessee players are getting involved with recruitment to understand why the same thing is going on in Georgia. And by the way, not just for Dallas Turner, but for others. Turner, just the latest example of that. Let me let you hear Jeremy Pruitt on this subject for a moment.
I believe it goes back, you know, to our players and the guys that they help recruit. And, you know, the guys we have on our team right now, they want to be the best that they can possibly be, and they work hard at it. They work hard in the classroom. They work hard on the field, in the weight room, and they do in recruiting. So, you know, they know who they want to play beside, and you know, who the better players you have on the team, the better opportunity you have as a team and as an individual. So these guys are bought into that, and they're working hard to help recruit the best student athletes to Tennessee.
I mean, I think that Pruitt makes a pretty good point there, that it's a pretty good reflection on the program when your former players, current players, recruits are willing to do this. To me, it's almost like a restaurant review of – not that many people want to go to a restaurant that they can't go find some, whether it be Yelp or whatever you're doing. You know, you want to see some satisfied customers before you make a choice to do anything. And when recruits or players are saying, hey, this is the school you want to be at, I guess the symbolism and all that is, I'm happy with the choice that I made. And from that standpoint, I think it's really good. And by the way, this isn't always the case. Let me take the opportunity here to get a little bit of a dig on the Florida Gators. I mean, I don't think that Chauncey Gardner, the former Gators defensive back, is going to be doing any recruiting for Florida as of late, based on some of the things that he said about the Gators on social media lately. Luke Ankrum, the former offensive lineman, I don't think he's going to be doing much of that kind of stuff either. Not every player who plays in an SEC school goes on to be happy about the school that he played at. We've seen some examples of some former Florida players where that's very much true. So the fact that a guy like Lorenzo Carter is willing to do that says something good about the happiness that he has with his choice. Current players, you better believe they want the best going alongside with them. So it's kind of a fun thing to see. In this case, it's Georgia players pushing after Dallas Turner. The reason why it's taking place, maybe that's not quite so much fun. Looks like Turner's got a lot of competition right now for his choice, and Georgia's not in the lead spot. They may not even be in the number two spot at the moment. But nonetheless, the tactic being used here, I think, is creative. It looks like a next phase for recruitment, especially during a time which you can't have those visits. You can't sell yourself on campus. So you sell yourself with what you do have available. And for Georgia, lucky enough, what it has available are some pretty happy current recruits, current players, and former players to extol the virtues of playing at UGA. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented today by Meriwether and Tharp, and it's great to have you with us. And boy, it's good to have Meriwether and Tharp with us, too. You know, our friends, you know, Bob Tharp, the whole team over there, they were very, very gracious to us during the entire time when we were doing the show from home. Because let's face it, when you're doing the show from home, you don't see the cool Meriwether and Tharp logo on the screen behind me. We, by the end, now our buddy Michael Carvel had gotten it, so we were able to play the Meriwether and Tharp video and give the full value for the most part. But for a while there, it was just a hand-drawn Meriwether and Tharp logo that my kids had made. But our friends over there, they were very gracious about all that, very complimentary for us getting back in the studio. So I love having great partners here at a Dog Nation Daily, and Meriwether and Tharp is as good as you're ever going to get in regards to that. And let me tell you this, they are also tenacious fighters for you, too, because as friendly and fun as they can be, they also know how to get after it when it comes to getting what you need during the divorce process. That means rebuilding your relationship with your family, including your children. That means protecting your finances. That means making you whole again. If you're going through a divorce, it's obviously a huge challenge. I understand all of that. But the challenge can be made less daunting when you have a smart fighter on your side, and the entire team there at Meriwether and Tharp, they wouldn't be in the building over there if they didn't have those credentials. So they are your source for Georgia divorce. I say that all the time. And my advice to you is to reach out, get in touch, have them on your side. Learn about the process. They've been through this thousands of times. They can put that knowledge to work for you. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. One more thing on recruiting before I dive into what else I want to get into. So Jeff Sintel, who you heard from a moment ago, will be with us tomorrow. Now, in addition to talking about Dallas Turner, I'm sure that'll come up. There are a couple of other things that I think are bubbling right now that we got to deal with Jeff tomorrow. One good, one not so good. Let me start with the good. It seems like there's a little growing chatter out there, maybe, and I mean maybe, about Georgia and former Clemson commit Corey Foreman, a big-time defensive end prospect. Seems like there might be something going on there. Maybe more of a possibility, let's say it that way, that Georgia really might have a chance to kind of get in on a visit for Foreman or something along those lines. We'll let Jeff tell us if there's anything new about that when he joins us tomorrow. Then the not-so-good... And listen, there's a long way to go here. Doesn't, necessarily the end of the world. A little bit of UNC chatter in Tony Grimes as of late. I'm not so excited about that necessarily for the five-star cornerback, but Jeff will tell us about all of that tomorrow when he joins us here on our program. As I said before, it's Bill Bender coming up in a moment. Bill has touted, on the basis of his ranking of the top 25 quarterbacks in college football, Jamie Newman as the SEC's best, transfer market-wise, the best available in America. So we'll let Bill Bender from the Sporting News tell us more about that in a moment, and we'll have some fun with the rest of these SEC quarterbacks on his list. Before we get to that, a cool video got shared on social media of what looks to be confirming some of the other videos that we've seen of a quite slimmed down Jamari Salyer. In fact, I think we have some evidence from Salyer on the scales here. Big Dog Club LLC, that's at Coach Kev 79 on Twitter, shares this with us. Jamari Salyer down to 312 pounds standing on the scales. That's obviously the kind of weight you think you want a tackle to have in the Matt Luke offense. You assume it's going to be a more athletic offensive line, an offensive line that's maybe moving around a bit more, not quite content to stand there and maul the way that the Georgia offensive lines did in the past with Sam Pittman. Good offensive lines those were, maybe just a little bit different when it comes to this Georgia offensive line led by Matt Luke. And speaking of leadership, when you see Salyer tipping the scales there at that number, clearly he's been working hard during this coronavirus lockdown. Clearly he's been trying to stay in the best possible shape that he can. I think it speaks to the leadership he should be able to have for you at Georgia. We know that last year's offensive line leader for the Dogs, Andrew Thomas, feels that way about his former teammate and former high school teammate there as well, because when he joined us for Dog Nation Appreciation on video a couple of weeks ago, he certainly had plenty of good things to say about what he thinks that Salyer's going to grow into at Georgia this season. Here's what Andrew Thomas said about Jamari Salyer when he joined us a couple of weeks ago.
A new face, Jamari Salyer, on offense, I think, is going to be new. A lot of guys, expected him to play really early. Things happen, but he's going to be a great player. He's kept his head up. He's going to continue to fight. I think he's going to be the anchor on the offensive line.
I love that phrase from Thomas. He'll be the anchor of the offensive line. I think there's a chance that's true, and obviously the offseason work that Salyer is apparently doing is certainly evidence in that direction. We got into this conversation on video during our comment section on our RS Andrews Cooldown not too long ago. Someone asked the question about who does Georgia take to SEC Media Days, assuming there is an SEC Media Days. Georgia typically takes three. And I think you can make a case on the defensive side of the ball with the vocal representative leaders for Georgia. Monty Rice looks like a pretty good candidate there, and I would say Richard LeCount looks like another pretty good candidate. You can make a case for Eric Stokes because I think Stokes is a good talker and he's got a great personality. But the defensive names are fairly easy to identify. You're going to take at least one offensive guy, though, and it can be a little tough to figure out who that is. It's not necessarily best players. It's not necessarily Zamir White. It's not necessarily George Pickens. Those aren't talkers for Georgia necessarily yet. They aren't spokesmen for Georgia necessarily yet. Jamie Newman just got here. It seems very not much like Kirby Smart to pick a guy like Newman to be the spokesman for the team when he's only been at Georgia now just for a short little while. So you start wondering, well, if this team is looking for an offensive spokesman, a representative at a place like SEC Media Days, who does it end up being? I think on the basis of the offseason work that Salyer's apparently doing, I think he actually has a pretty good candidate to be that guy. I think Andrew Thomas, now he and Salyer are friends, so obviously Thomas is going to vouch for Salyer, but it doesn't mean he's wrong. When he says potential anchor for that offensive line, I don't think that's too strong of a word to use. And in a time we all have questions about who's doing what kind of work away from the program, it's kind of cool to see Jamari checking in on social media as much as he is to give an indication that he's taking this time very seriously, putting himself in the best possible condition he can be in. I think that'll pay off for him on the field later on this season. It is very good to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. We got a lot of stuff to come and get to throughout the program, including some interesting insight in what football might look like when it returns later on this year, and it seems likely we're heading that direction. We'll get to that later. For now, more on Jamie Newman. Let's talk to Bill Bender from the Sporting News. Really glad to get a chance to talk to Bill Bender. First time in a while for us to have Bill on the show. National writer for the Sporting News. Always fun content, especially this time of year when you, even during the midst of the coronavirus, you feel like you're turning that corner, getting ready for the start of the season. Bill, good enough to whet our appetite for some of these comparisons and really fun opinions, and also good enough to join us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp here today. Bill, hope you're staying safe and healthy. Looks like you're anticipating the start of the season much the same way we are, so we appreciate you stopping by to speak to us about it for a few minutes.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So let me begin with this. I liked your ranking of the top 25 quarterbacks in college football. Georgia fans certainly probably enjoyed seeing Jamie Newman make the top 10 there at number 10. This is obviously an audience here that's glad to see that. But to play devil's advocate for a moment, you know, we haven't seen Newman yet at Georgia. We haven't seen Newman yet go against an SEC schedule. What did you see in him to make you feel confident ranking him as high on your list as you did?
You know, I just think he's going to fit with the new offensive coordinator. He's going to be set up for success with the weapons around him. I mean, he's got
great receivers, and, you know, at Wake Forest he was able to put up big numbers, and I think that's what Georgia needed to do. They needed to go get a quarterback that can do a little bit of both. He's going to be able to – I think what they saw with LSU is what you've got to do in college football now. You got to score a bunch of points, and the teams, I think, can go out and do that.
Let me bring you in on the discussion that Georgia fans have been having, you know, for a while now. I think there's a belief among the fan base that the Georgia offense does need to change at least some. That's why Todd Monken was brought in. But there's also this sense of, in a weird offseason where there was no spring practice, given Kirby Smart's inclinations to want to maybe keep doing things the way that they've been doing them for a while, do you get the sense that Todd Monken will get the full control to make the changes that Georgia probably needs to make? He obviously brings a different philosophy in place than what Georgia's had before. If you had to prognosticate, and this is kind of an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, if you had to prognosticate how much width that a guy like Monken has to make the necessary changes so a guy like Newman can thrive, how much of that would you expect to see?
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to find out. And I'm not answering it, but I think they are going to have to open the offense up a little bit and not just be resemble something that is the early Nick Saban dynasty, because the game has changed such. You can win 10 games with that style of offense. You can go to the Sugar Bowl every year with that offense. But, you know, like I said, LSU, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, they've shown that the model is you take a quarterback that can tilt the field, you get it to the weapons, and you go out and try to average
40 to 45 points per game. That's what it takes to win a national championship now. So I think all of those things are at work.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I thought it was interesting that Newman comes in at number 10 on your list. Kyle Trask comes in at number 14. My guess is you may have heard from a few Gators fans on that. Obviously, around here, we hear from Florida fans, too, and they are of the belief that because Trask is established as a starter, because he's working with Dan Mullen, that it's really Trask's year to thrive. I guess, what did you see in Trask that made you want to rate him a little lower than some Florida fans probably thought he should have been ranked?
Well, I think he's going to be a guy that it takes the jump in his second year with Dan Mullen. You got to trust Dan Mullen in this instance, and I think Dan Mullen did a good job with quarterbacks, and Kyle Trask stepped in there, didn't make a lot of mistakes, played pretty efficient, and look for him to continue to do that next year and maybe take that next step in development. We'll see if he does.
Obviously, one of the interesting things about Trask is it sort of feels like some of the things that we've heard about him this offseason, not necessarily from you, but other people who do what you do for a living, they do sound a little bit similar to me to some of what you're hearing about Felipe Franks before the start of last year. We ultimately know how that ended. Is there a chance that maybe Florida fans also end up disappointed and maybe Trask kind of goes the way of Franks of maybe not quite being that next generation of what people think of as a Dan Mullen quarterback, especially given the fact that Trask doesn't really do what Mullen quarterbacks typically do, which is run around a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a guy that Trask showed with the experience last year that he is. I think he's a little bit more efficient passer than Felipe Franks was. I think he's a little more accurate. I think he understands that offense. He's a big target. He's just a different style player. So, you know, there's a reason why Felipe Franks transferred, because Kyle Trask won that job. So I think he'll be a little bit better than that.
Let me talk to you about the situation in Alabama for a moment, because it's kind of interesting. I've said about Georgia before that if you had to have a year where you're a little uncertain at quarterback, as you said, Georgia's got a talented guy. We just haven't seen him yet at UGA. We haven't seen him in the SEC. This is probably a pretty good year for that to be true, just given the other uncertain situations in this conference, including the situation in Alabama. Bill, I think there's a really good chance that Georgia plays Alabama twice, and I think there's a pretty good chance they face different quarterbacks in both those games. The September matchup, I would say there's a very good chance it's Mac Jones who gets the nod from Saban there, but it might be Bryce Young by the end of the season if these two teams are playing again in December in the SEC Championship. How would you compare the situation of, hey, according to your own rankings, Alabama doesn't have a top 10 quarterback right now, but in a day and age in which very few teams have any depth at quarterback, Alabama's got two of the top 25. What do you make of the competition potentially going on between Jones and Bryce Young, and do you have much of a handicap on that for right now?
I think I would kind of agree with you. I think Bryce Young will continue to see reps as the season goes on. What killed, I think, his chances to start in week one is he didn't have spring practice, and he didn't get those snaps and experience in spring practice that would allow him to make that jump. So, there's a very good chance Georgia plays them twice. There's a very good chance that in the second game that Bryce Young would play a more of a role in that offense, because, again, I mean, Mac Jones did well last year. He played very well, but this is that debate that we were just having. Would you rather have a Jake Fromm or a guy like Jamie Newman who can run the offense? And I think at the end of the day, they're going to look at Bryce Young's playmaking skills, and he may end up being that guy.
In the situation in Alabama, that when you look at Tua Tagovailoa and what happened for him, I think one of the things that didn't get talked about enough is, not that Tua is not obviously a very good player, but I think he was greatly aided by one of the best collection of wide receiver talent I've ever seen on any one team at one time. Now, obviously, Ruggs and Judy are gone off that group for 2020, but when you're trying to establish either Mac Jones in a full season or, you know, Bryce Young stepping in as a freshman phenom, the presence of Jalen Waddle, the presence of Devontae Smith, I think that really helps the Alabama quarterback no matter who it is. I think it helped Tua Tagovailoa more than ultimately those receivers were given credit for. And ultimately, if you're Georgia, you're thinking about facing the Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa in September. Dealing with those Alabama wide receivers is still a significant issue, even if two of the guys that were headliners from a year ago are now gone. So I'm assuming you'll agree with this, but one of the things that makes that Alabama quarterback transition easier is the fact that they still have a lot of talent left in that receiver room.
Yeah, I mean, they get Devontae Smith back, and Najee Harris, that's another kick-on guy. I mean, they've got a ton of weapons. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to change. I think they're going to continue to have this really dynamic offense around the running game, and whichever quarterback plays, that's why they're going to be the hands-on favorite in the SEC West again, especially with what LSU lost. I think Auburn's going to be pretty good, but there's no doubt in my mind that Alabama's still the most talented team in the SEC.
Let me do a couple more quarterback things, and I want to ask about the NCAA stuff before we're done here. What do you think of Bo Nix going into year two? You have a number 22 on your list. I've kind of jokingly said Jared Stidham's in line seemingly to be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots. If he does well there in the Bill Belichick situation, you almost wonder, did Auburn get enough out of him when he was there? And it kind of puts more of a spotlight on Gus Malzahn, who seemingly is always in a wrestling match with his offensive coordinator about control over that situation. I actually think that Chad Morris is a pretty good hire, but I'm not quite so sure how much freedom he's going to have to influence what goes on there with Bo Nix. Auburn's in a unique situation, or at least a rare situation, in that it has an established starter in the SEC returning for this season. How confident are you in a Bo Nix, and what do you expect to see from him in year two?
I think his accuracy's got to improve. Once that does, the flashes of playmaking skill were there. He's a guy that had his moments as a freshman, and in Gus Malzahn's offense, he fits pretty well because he can make a few plays scrambling around. So, I don't think anything different other than he's going to have to take that next step, because Auburn's going to play all those same tough teams. They have a ridiculously tough schedule for the second straight season. They played North Carolina early in the year, and North Carolina's got a hot quarterback named Sam Howell. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I noticed you had him number 3 on your list, third best quarterback in the country. If that's true, the season's going to be very interesting. As you said, it's a non-conference game against Auburn. It'll be an ACC championship game against Clemson. Sam Howell, who you rate very high out of North Carolina, that's one of those players that could have quite a say in what the postseason situation looks like.
Absolutely, and I think he will. And, that's a guy that's a team on the uptick. Mac's done a good job recruiting since he's come back. And people are looking back at his first tenure at Minnesota. They won a lot of games.
Yep.
And they had a lot of NFL talent late in his first tenure there. Guys like Joe Bly, guys like Lonnie Holiday. And that's coming back. And I think something to keep in mind when you see that is that they're going to be pretty good. And, I look for that to continue. They are recruiting in the top 5 right now. When was the last time we said that about North Carolina?
No doubt. It's very interesting to see. Let me do one more thing before we let you go. NCAA yesterday lifts the moratorium on players voluntarily returning to campus. That can happen as soon as June 1st. There's a chance the SEC does open the door for that. They're going to vote on that tomorrow. It's no later than June 15th, probably. Sounds like Ohio State could be coming back right in between that on June the 8th. Seems like the Big 12 going to drag its feet a little bit more. What do you make of the various ways that folks around the country are making their plans for returning to football? At this point in time, it seems like we're going to have games in some form or fashion. What the summer looks like, I guess, is still somewhat up in the air. What do you make of the current situation as college football deals with the coronavirus?
Well, I think, like anything else, we just take the positive steps and go from there. There's a lot of logistical things that are going to need to happen for us to get college football back. I think we're on the right track, though. In Ohio, if you would ask me this 2 weeks ago, I'd have said no way. Now we're starting to see some positive steps in that direction. So I think college football's probably not going to look like what we want it to look like. There's probably going to be a lot of measures in between along the way. But if we get it, I think it's going to be worth it. And then, it gives us an incentive to continue to do things that are distance to the point so we can have it. And I think that's the most important thing.
Well, Bill, we appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. For folks who want more of the, whether it be your quarterback rankings or any of the other preseason content you're doing right now, how can folks find you online?
Yeah, you can just find us at sportingnews.com. I appreciate you having me on, too. I know we've kind of circled around these same COVID topics on most of my radio hits, but it's actually nice to talk to somebody about something other than that. And you brought the good questions there. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, Bill, thanks so much for your time. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Hey, take care.
All right, good stuff there, Bill Bender from the Sporting News. And, what he touches on there at the end is exactly our thought process in all of this. That ultimately, the biggest story in the sport is when's the game's going to return? What do practices look like? But you can't just do that 24 hours a day. You just can't. I mean, ultimately, what people really want is, how good is Jamie Newman? How much does he compare to, you know, whatever the quarterback? How bad is George going to be Florida? I mean, ultimately, that's what people really want. So there's a real big uncertain thing hanging over our head. It's COVID-19 and blah, 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 blah. And that's real and that's serious. And that's obviously the most important story. But we can't just like live our entire life, you know, following every twist and turn of that, because we are, after all, a football show. It seems like, parallel to the preseason football topics that we do, it seems like that the news in terms of football's eventual return continues to be, for the most part, good. We'll have more on this coming up in a moment. But our thought process, our theory around here has always been, we're going to assume there is a season until someone tells us there's not. The example I always cited for this was the SEC basketball tournament. They were planning to play the games until like 5 seconds before one of them was supposed to tip off. And at that point in time, everything got shut down. There's nothing wrong with that. There was, I'm talking about going back to the middle of March, when all of this was as uncertain as it possibly could have been. We said at the time, there's no reason to get scared and panic about not having a season. We were months and months away. Plan as if there will be, and if someone tells you there can't be, then just deal with that then. And that's kind of always been our attitude, and for the most part, I think that attitude has kind of been rewarded. One more thing on the Newman stuff before we turn the page on this. I didn't have time to get into this with him, but in addition to ranking Newman ahead of all the other SEC quarterbacks, he also ranks him ahead of all the transfers there as well. And listen, you know, there are two guys that once it became a possibility that Georgia might need a transfer quarterback, we talked about Derek King a lot, who ended up at Miami, was at Houston. We talked about KJ Costello a lot, was at Stanford. When he was healthy there, he played really well. Now he's at Mississippi State. He probably puts up some really big numbers. I don't think Bulldogs win very many games in Starkville, but I think that Costello probably puts up some pretty big numbers. And yet Bill Bender, national writer, says, I still like Newman over the other two, given all the situation there. So, you know, this is not a guy who's emotionally connected to Newman the way that you might think Dog Nation Daily might be. This is a guy that's got to, you know, serve an entire country's worth of an audience. He sees some things he likes in Jamie Newman. That's kind of cool for me to think about. And can't wait to see Newman validate some of those opinions when he starts playing here this fall.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, very good stuff from Bill Bender. Really good to have him here on Dog Nation Daily here today. And fun to start thinking about the upcoming season. It is going to be on its way here before you know. At least that seems to be the case. As the NCAA does lift that moratorium, vote going down with the SEC, we will follow that and see how it goes. Now, in the midst of this, you're still dealing with a serious situation when it comes to the coronavirus, and I do want to touch on a couple of those stories here for a moment. Starting with, I guess the Tuscaloosa News broke this story. AL.com is actually where I read it, though. They did some reporting on this, too. So they're doing some stadium expansion at Bryant-Denny Stadium. They've had some construction work going on there. And I guess I'm going to have the general facts in this. About 100 construction workers working on this project. About 10 of them have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to what AL.com and the Tuscaloosa News have reported on this. I guess here's my only point. And some eyewitness accounts now say that since this has happened, there are a lot fewer people kind of milling around and doing the work compared to the large number of people that were working as recently as a few days ago. That's based on some eyewitness accounts there in Tuscaloosa. I think that we have to be very careful here. You know, I don't think you necessarily treat it as a scandal when somebody tests positive. This is a real disease. It is contagious. It is out there. To be out and about in society, you're going to have some positive, you're going to have some positive tests. You're going to have that take place. It simply becomes a question of, what do you do after that? You know, how do you handle things after that? Because there's really very little I think you can do to prevent, you know, some transmission from occurring here. It's about what you do after that. So obviously this is going to get a lot of attention because of the fact that it's Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's in the SEC. The SEC on the verge of kind of making something happen. This is a lot of that. So you'll see what kind of goes on from there. By the way, speaking of coronavirus, more kind of bad news to report on this, at least for now. Former UGA grad, Auburn coach Pat Dye, has apparently tested positive for coronavirus, according to reports. This will obviously get a lot of attention, rightly so, because the fact that Dye is 80. So tough situation there for him. We'll certainly have a lot of prayers for him. That's a guy that Georgia had, you know, did a lot of battles with back in the 80s, but at one point in time he was a very proud Georgia player and someone I've heard speak a bunch of times and kind of be a part of college football community. He loves college football, so we'll have a lot of prayers going out to Pat Dye here on this. Speaking of Auburn, you may remember Jashaun Sheffield from one time, guy who was kind of involved, you know, Georgia was seemingly involved in his recruitment. He was out of coastal Georgia area, ended up going to Auburn. I guess he's been arrested for a DUI. He is suspended from the Auburn program for right now, so Sheffield not with Auburn at the moment. There is some news. We talked to you the other day about Bubba Chandler, the Georgia baseball commit, also a football player. He's from the Athens area. As expected, he committed to Clemson for both football and baseball. Chandler was not really on Georgia's radar from a football standpoint. Georgia had zeroed in on Brock Vandegrift. Chandler was not really on his radar, their radar as a football player, but was a baseball commit to the program. But Clemson has stepped in there. For the most part, I think the recruiting community's belief on this is that Clemson got involved with Chandler once Caleb Williams came out with his top three and did not include Clemson in that top three. So at that point in time, they had room for a quarterback, and at that point in time, Chandler became a guy they were interested in. I've jokingly said, you know, for all the problems that that Clemson has caused for Georgia on the football side of things when it comes to recruiting, I guess now Clemson becoming a bit of a problem for Scott Strickland, the baseball program there as well at the moment. So we will follow that. But for now, Bubba Chandler, Athens area quarterback, has committed to Clemson for both football and baseball. A couple other stories to get to here for a moment. This is not really SEC related, but in a way, it kind of is. So we talked before about the reports out of Columbus that Ohio State's looking like it's on its way back to campus on June the 8th. It seems like that's where they're heading. Voluntary player return there. Gene Smith, the athletic director, has also spoken a bit about what social distancing looks like inside the horseshoe. You know, Ohio State's got a very big stadium, much the same way Georgia does. Ohio State there in Columbus, slightly bigger. He says they're looking at everything right now. If it's social distancing, everything from, like, say, 20,000 people, maybe as much as 50,000 people. I think the 50,000 number was something he had to come out and say after the fact, because when people initially heard the 20,000 thing, it was kind of taken there as the Ohio State athletic director says there's only going to be 20,000 people at the horseshoe this year. He's kind of since kind of walked that back a little bit. When Brian Kemp, the Georgia governor, was on the Feinbaum show yesterday and speaking about whether it be the kickoff classic from Chick-fil-A to begin the season at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, he didn't want to be too specific about that there at the moment. So it seems like now the next big phase of this conversation is going to be, what does football look like when it does return? It seems obvious that we're playing games this fall. I even believe that we're going to be playing games week one. I don't think anyone's necessarily going to have an empty stadium, but how many fans do you have in those stadiums? It seems like that's the next phase of this. It was interesting to hear the Ohio State athletic director speak out on this yesterday because of the fact that Ohio State may be a Big Ten team, but there's kind of an SEC sensibility for how they go about their work, and so that's kind of what he said yesterday. A couple more things to do here real quick. The NCAA also comes out on the notion of the one-time transfer rule. They've pushed pause on that for right now. That's not going to happen for this upcoming year. So for the wave of transfers that we thought might be made eligible, including, you know, someone like, say, Cade Mays leaving Georgia to go to Tennessee, the rule is not going to be in place for this year. So that'll leave those transfers to be handled much the same way they have in the past there. So if you're looking for a wave of eligibility, including a guy like Mays, there for Tennessee, this rule is going to slow down some of that talk a little bit, it would appear, and we will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily for a moment, I want to mention some good news for Georgia basketball, which added a graduate transfer yesterday from Stony Brook. His name's Andrew Garcia. I think he averaged somewhere in the neighborhood of like 13 points a game for a Stony Brook Division I program. And listen, if you're double-digit scorer anywhere in Division I, that's obviously the kind of player that Georgia can use right now. They need as much scoring as they can get. Garcia looks like a pretty nice prospect here. Pairing him with what I thought was a really nice graduate transfer addition from the kid from George Mason not too long ago. So Tom Crean knows he's got to rebuild his roster a little bit and using the transfer market to do that. I guess the one really big get I would have loved to have seen Georgia got, we talked about this a few days ago. Remember Romello White from Arizona State? White had played really well for Arizona State against Georgia in a game that Georgia did not look good at all earlier in the season. He'd put himself out there as a graduate transfer. At one point in time, there was thought that some Georgia interest might be there. The honest truth is I had forgotten to even follow this story. I assumed that he was going to go to Vanderbilt because his Vanderbilt coach, Jerry Stackhouse, had an AAU relationship with White. Come to find out, Romello White committed to Ole Miss, which was a little bit surprising for me, but I guess come to find out Ole Miss got a coaching relationship that knew him at Arizona State or whatever else. So that would have been the graduate transfer that you would have liked to have seen Georgia gotten. Ultimately, that did not happen, but you get Andrew Garcia instead, a shooting guard, small forward type player, as Tom Crean tries to rebuild his program in the absence of Anthony Antman Edwards and the other players that have left the program this year. Tom Crean tries to rebuild things. By the way, speaking of Tom Crean, it was a really good interview that our buddy Mike Griffith did with Crean recently as a part of his On the Beat program presented by Ingles. So you can check that on the Dog Nation video channels. It's been quite a run as of late for Dog Nation in terms of some really good interviews. Mike talking to Tom Crean recently with former Georgia coach Mark Richt. I thought that was a ton of fun, especially just given, you know, I think that Coach Richt's in a great place in his life now, relaxed and can kind of look back on his time at Georgia. Also, his connection to the ACC has actually worked out pretty well here. He can tell you a little bit about Jamie Newman. He can do some of those kind of things for you. So it was fun to get a chance to see that. That's available up and running for you on the Dog Nation video channels as well. You heard early in the show, I played the audio from you for Andrew Thomas, the former Georgia offensive lineman. He was a part of our Dog Nation Appreciation Series. We talked to Thomas. We talked to Swift. We talked to Jake Fromm. We talked to Isaiah Wilson, the former Georgia offensive tackle. It's been a really good run as of late with some great coronavirus lockdown interviews. I don't know how else to say it. You know, there's just been a lot of good stuff out there in those regards. And the great thing about the magic of, you know, video these days, it's all chronicled. It's still right there for you at the Dog Nation video channel. So please make sure you check that out on both Facebook and YouTube. Become a subscriber to the Dog Nation YouTube page if you have not done so already. That's a good thing to be able to do. And don't forget on our program tomorrow, as I said, speaking of really good interviews, Jeff Sintel's done a lot of those with a lot of the recruits as well. And he'll be with us. We'll talk to him about what's going on with Dallas Turner, all the other recruiting news that's out there. We'll get into all of that tomorrow to close out the week in fun fashion.
All right, quick confession. This is a re-record of the show close from what aired on video here today. I was so excited yesterday about the fact that our episode number for our podcast and our Gator Hater Updater number were both on nice, clean, even numbers. We were at episode 1200 for the podcast, 1300 for the Gator Hater Updater. But in my excitement, I conflated the two numbers. We were wrapping up today's show on video. So let me give a very, very nice congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs for reigning over the Florida Gators in the last 1,300 days. That is our Gator Hater Updater. I'll also end with an admonition. Kyle Busch, most hated man in NASCAR, looked to be intentionally wrecking noted Georgia fan Chase Elliott last night's NASCAR race in Darlington. Good TV, by the way. For those of you that like Chase because he's a UGA fan, reasons not to like Kyle Busch today. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.